Good morning. 11 minutes before 8 o'clock on this Tuesday morning, March the 11th. You're listening to KCAW Sitka. I'm Chris Todd with Raven News. At its regular meeting tonight, the Sitka Assembly will consider a pair of proposals setting guidelines for the potential sale of bulk or bottled water at the Sawmill Cove Industrial Park. One proposed ordinance would set a price structure for bulk and bottled water. Bottled water would be priced lower than solid water sold, water sold in bulk, on the assumption that a bottling operation would generate more jobs. The other ordinance would establish a bulk water sale fund within the city budget to manage potential revenue from water sales. Tonight's meeting begins at 6 p.m. in Assembly Chambers. Raven Radio will provide live coverage at that time. An Assembly work session on the effort to develop a new solid waste management plan will precede that meeting at 5 p.m. Sitka District Court has sentenced two men linked to a September shooting at Sitka's Pioneer Bar. 55-year-old Richard Davis will serve 2 months in jail for assault and misconduct involving a weapon. 22-year-old Tyler Westland already served 5 days in jail and still owes a $1,000 fine for criminal mischief resulting in property damage. The two men were not from Sitka. Davis is from Juneau and Westland is from Port Townsend, Washington. The incident started in September when Davis and another man were arguing inside of the men's restroom of the Pioneer Bar. The pair reportedly had a long-standing feud. According to court records, the man fled the bar when Davis pulled a gun from his waistband. Davis fired the gun, leaving a hole in the floor, and then handed the gun to Westland, who ran out of the bar with it tucked in the waistband of his pants. At the time of the shooting, police said Westland was Davis's deckhand on his fishing vessel. No one was injured in the incident. You can find a link to the original story on kcaw.org. President Obama's signature health care law, the Affordable Care Act, is a big law with plenty of ripple effects, but at its heart is a pretty simple premise. Americans who lack health insurance should be able to go online and pick a plan, and if their income falls beneath a certain threshold, then the federal government will cover part of the cost. That is, unless you live in Alaska or one of the other states that has opted out of the federal Medicaid expansion. Then you can actually make too little money to qualify for help. This is what some are calling the Medicaid donut hole, and as Rachel Walsout reports, falling into the donut hole can be a frustrating experience.
One night in early March, Wayne and Sarah Taranoff walked into a room at the University of Alaska Southeast for an open enrollment session on the Affordable Care Act. They didn't come with high hopes.
Basically, just to see what the options were. I didn't think there would be any, and there wasn't.
And why was that?
Because we're in the bracket that got screwed.
We make too little.
Too little.
And they didn't expand the Medicaid.
The Taranoffs are self-employed.
We have our own business. A little gift store downtown.
And they haven't had health insurance in decades. Wayne Taranoff has diabetes. 1 year, he said, they spent about 60% of their income on medical bills. But their gift shop doesn't bring in much money. If they tried to buy health insurance on their own, it would cost...
More than we make.
We only make about...
Well, about $8,000 a year.
About $8,000 a year. The store only makes enough to pay its electricity and its
if we were open more,
phone bills and stuff.
Better,
well.
Under the Affordable Care Act, anyone who earns up to four times the federal poverty limit is eligible for tax credits and subsidies that cover the cost of insurance bought on the exchanges. In Alaska, that means an individual who makes more than about $14,500 and less than about $58,000 is likely eligible for some kind of help. But people like the Taranoffs, who make less than $14,000 a year, can't get subsidies. That's because when the law was originally written, everyone under the federal poverty limit was supposed to be covered by an expansion of Medicaid. In 2012, the Supreme Court upheld the Affordable Care Act in a landmark ruling. But, they ruled, the federal government couldn't force states to expand Medicaid. And in Alaska...
I believe a costly Medicaid expansion, especially on top of the broken Obamacare system, is a hot mess.
That's Governor Sean Parnell in November 2013 announcing that Alaska would not expand Medicaid. The way expansion was supposed to work is this. States would expand the pool of people eligible for Medicaid, covering not just families with kids and people with disabilities, but also low-income adults who don't have kids at home, like the Taranoffs. The federal government would cover the full cost of the expansion for the first 3 years and at least 90% of the cost after that. But Parnell argued that the federal government couldn't be trusted to keep its end of the bargain.
The decision comes down to this. can states trust the federal government to not cut and run on its share of the cost?
Are you
yep.
angry about that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, well, I mean, I mixed emotions. I was totally against the healthcare thing the way they were doing it. And so in a way,
the Taranoffs said that they actually find the whole Affordable Care Act disappointing. They would have preferred a single-payer system like the one that Canada has. The idea of being forced to buy insurance bothers them.
We're being forced to pay private insurance companies.
Not us. We don't make enough.
The Taranoffs won't be forced to pay any penalty for remaining without insurance. They can fill out a hardship waiver. They'll simply remain as they were, uninsured and shouldering the cost of medical bills themselves. According to a state-funded study, about 43,000 Alaskans fall into the same category as the Taranoffs. Of those, about 17,000 are Alaska Native and qualify for tribal health benefits. The rest, if they want health coverage, will have to pay full cost.
This is going to give you the least out-of-pocket and the lowest deductible.
Meanwhile, at the enrollment event in Sitka, organizers estimated that out of the 25 or so people who came in to get help finding health insurance, 7 left empty-handed. They, too, fell into the Medicaid donut hole, which, for now, is a pretty uncomfortable place to be. In Sitka, I'm Rachel Waldholtz.
The northern southeast city of Yakutat is gearing up for a wave energy experiment. If it's a success, the community of about 650 residents could lower its high diesel-fueled power costs. The system could also be a model for some other isolated Alaska cities. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
Scott Newland opens the door to Yakutat's new power plant. It's not so bad outside the sound-absorbing walls, and that's good news for Newland, who's headed up Yakutat's power system for 15 years.
That new plant just changed the whole atmosphere, especially where I'm living right next door to it.
Its generators run more efficiently, and Newland's proud of that. But power costs in Yakutat remain high.
Since I've been involved here, that's always been a goal, is to find a different source of energy other than diesel fuel.
These days, he's thinking about a power source with a different sound.
Wave energy is probably the most exciting thing we have going.
Yakutat's geography doesn't work for hydro. Weather limits what you can get out of solar and wind. Wood-fueled biomass got serious consideration, but with only 450 electrical customers, it doesn't have the efficiencies of scale. That's why the town is looking toward the ocean. A number of emerging technologies are available. Some use anchored buoys, others long lines of floats. Yakutat's trying out a smaller device called the Surge Wave Converter, made by Boston-based Resolute Marine Energy. It's sort of like a paddle hinged to a base on the ocean floor. Here's how Newland describes it.
It reminds me of a kelp frond in the water as waves go by, and it sways back and forth like that. It's that slow and that mild.
The back and forth movement powers a pump, which pushes water through pipes to the shore. That pressure is the carbon-free energy that runs an electrical generator. Resolute Marine has tested the surge at a North Carolina research facility. Yakutat planner Bill Lucy says it's time to try it out in the Gulf of Alaska.
We know it makes electricity. It survived an East Coast storm. So now what we need to know is how much is it going to cost to anchor them to the bottom so they don't bounce around in a West Coast storm.
Yakutat hoped to put a test unit in the water this year. If it worked, it would have added about a dozen more later on. But permitting and other delays pushed that back to 2015. So the job now for Lucy and others is to research possible impacts to the community and the environment.
Since we're not going to be generating electricity underwater, there probably won't be an issue with the fish. Usually what can happen is your sharks and your rays can become attracted to underwater cables. But this project will simply pump pressurized seawater to a shore-based plant, and the electricity will be generated on land.
He says seabirds aren't expected to be an issue since the system's underwater. Acoustic tests will look for impacts on whales and seals. Commercial fisheries are being taken into account, and then there's the surfers, attracted by the same ocean power that makes this project a possibility.
There's a lot of beach break all along that area, and if we put 14 of these panels out, it's not going to take out all the wave areas for surfing, and it might not even be an issue where they are.
Funding and technical help for this testing phase is coming from the federal, state, and local governments. Early estimates put the final cost at about $3 million, but it could be much higher. Borough manager Skip Ryman hopes it'll pencil out, but he's trying to be realistic.
The big question is, of course, is wave energy feasible? Is it going to be something that will actually aid the consumer? If wave energy proves to be more expensive than diesel, then certainly this is something that probably throw it under the bus for us.
It'll take a couple years till that's known. Back at the power plant, Newland remains optimistic.
This might be huge. That's what I'm hoping, you know, if we can harness some of the kinetic energy out of the ocean, it could change the face of power generation for the world.
Or at least for some other coastal Alaska communities. This is Ed Schoenfeld reporting in Yakutat.
You can read more about the wave energy devices and learn how they work through our website at kcaw.org. Dallas Seavey ran a blistering pace and took the lead just hours before the finish to win this year's Iditarod Trail Sled Dog Race. Seavey was the first musher under the famed Burled Arch in Nome. Minutes later, second-place musher Allie Zirkel finished amid cheers. Seavey had to come from a three-hour deficit to overcome mushers Jeff King and Zirkel in the last 77 miles. This is the second race he's won. He won in 2012 as well. And that's it for Raven News for this hour. You're listening to KCAW Sitka. We've got 41 degrees and winds out of the east, 17 gusting to 25. Good morning.